Starbucks. If I say Starbucks, I believe you know what I mean. Many of you have been there, and if you haven't, well, it's a place that sells coffee. The first Starbucks was opened in 1971 in Seattle, and since then has crossed the world with stores in almost every country. We have two here in Lebanon. I remember back when getting a Starbucks in town was a big deal, and now we have two, and everybody, yeah. So it's become part of the landscape. Now, the CEO of Starbucks is a man named Brian Nickel, and he was hired to be CEO in 2024. And that year, his first year on the job, his total compensation was $98 million. A good job if you can get it. And he didn't even work the entire year. He was hired in September. So in 4 months, he received $98 million. Now, this wasn't just salary. It was salary and stock awards and bonuses. And I don't believe he's the highest paid CEO by any means. But his salary, however, does represent the widest CEO to worker pay gap of all companies in the S&P 500 for that year. Yes. The salary of this CEO was 6,666 times the earnings of that company's median worker. So the median worker there at Starbucks, well, was making a lot less than the CEO. And on top of that, he immediately started firing workers. They called it a restructuring. Starbucks announced last week that they are closing stores and will be laying off 900 workers. And this is on top of the 1,100 workers that lost their jobs in February. So this year, he's already put 2,000 people out of work. Now, you can argue that this is just business, and it may be. Starbucks sales have been on the decline, but you also wonder what might have been done. I mean, this man's compensation at 6,000 times, he could have paid the salaries of 2,000 employees and still had a lot left over. Now, this situation, it's an extreme, because in 2024, the average CEO compensation was a mere $18.9 million. Yes, they're barely scraping by. The average CEO compensation was $18.9, and with the average worker earning about $49,000, that means that the ratio pay gap was 285. So think of it this way. The average worker would have to work 285 years in order to earn what the CEO made in just 1 year. And this pay gap is only increasing. Last year, the year before, it was 268. It increased by 17, and then no doubt will go up this year. To put all this in perspective, the CEO-to-worker pay ratio in 1965 was 20. So in 50 years, it's gone from 20 to 285. Clearly, the rich are getting richer and the poor are getting less. Now, I'm not disparaging wealth because I, too, have been known to buy a lottery ticket when the pot gets really large. And spoiler, I haven't won yet. But as I said, I'm not disparaging wealth because money itself is neither good nor bad. It simply is. It is a tool of our economy. But the challenges for us as people of faith is how do we use the wealth that we've been given? We talked about this some last week, looking at another parable that we find in the Gospel of Luke. That was the parable of the dishonest manager, a very slippery parable indeed. And in that parable, Jesus describes a employee who worked for a wealthy man. And this employee, he either stole or mishandled or mismanaged the money of his boss. It's not clear what he actually did. But the boss got wind of it and immediately fired his employee. And the employee, knowing what to do now, devised a plan for his own future by cutting the debt of those who owed his boss money. He called them in and cut the debt right there. And he did this with the hope that when he was out of a job, then they would look back and go, oh, he helped us, I will help him. And that they will help him, take him in somehow. And the boss actually, he said good things about his employee for acting shrewdly in this case. Didn't hire him back, still was out of a job. And Jesus goes on to say through this parable that how we use money in this life is a reflection of how we will use God's riches in the kingdom. Jesus says after this parable that those who can be trusted with very little money on this earth can be trusted with very much riches in the kingdom. And those who can not be trusted with very little cannot be trusted with very much. How we act in this world is a reflection of how we will act in God's kingdom. So today, that brings us to the very next parable in Luke, and that is the parable of Lazarus and the rich man. And I will say that this is probably the most powerful of Jesus' parables, yet it's not as well known as, say, the parable of the prodigal son or the parable of the good Samaritan. And the reason is I think this parable scares us. It speaks a truth about wealth that scares us. The parable begins describing a rich man. We know he's rich because he dressed in expensive clothing and he ate sumptuously every day. Never missed a meal, never wanted for anything. But at the gate of the home of this rich man is another man. His name is Lazarus. Not to be confused with the Lazarus in the Gospel of John that Jesus raises from the dead. It's a common name. So at the gate, literally at the front door of the rich man, is lying this man named Lazarus who is starving. We are told that he didn't ask for anything, but all he wanted was the crumbs that fell off the table of the rich man. And his condition was so pathetic that lying there, he couldn't even stop the dogs from licking at his sores. Dogs used him as a source of food. Well, it's not surprising that Lazarus dies. And when he dies, he's carried away by the angels to be with Abraham, the great hero of the faith. The rich man, he also dies. He's given a proper burial, but he ends up in the land of the dead, as had Lazarus. We use the Greek word Hades here, the place of the dead. And just to be clear, we don't use this parable to offer a blueprint for the afterlife. It's Jesus' parable describing the two characters in this story. But in this story, they're both there in the place of the dead, and Lazarus is with Abraham, and the rich man is not doing so well. He is tormented in flames. And looking up and seeing Lazarus, he calls out, "Father Abraham, have mercy on me and send Lazarus to dip the tip of his finger in water and cool my tongue. For I am in agony in these flames." There's a lot going on there. First of all, he's asking for mercy. Did he show mercy in his lifetime? No. But he's asking for mercy now. And he's asking that Abraham send Lazarus, to send Lazarus. He still doesn't regard Lazarus as an equal. He's a servant to be ordered around. Send Lazarus down here. He's of no consequence. And he can come down and dip his finger. Give me just a drop of water. Remember, in his lifetime, Lazarus just wanted crumbs off the table. Now the rich man, all he can ask for is a drop of water because he is in agony in these flames. But Abraham says no. Abraham says, you know, remember that in your lifetime, you received good things. Your life was comfortable and you were full. Lazarus, on the other hand, he received not bad things, but evil things. The wording here is very interesting. Lazarus received evil things. And where do you think those evil things came from? We'll get to that in a moment. But now, Lazarus is comforted here, and you're in agony. It's a reversal of fortune. And then he goes on to say, beside all this, between you and us, a great chasm has been fixed, this uncrossable canyon. And those who are where you are cannot come to us, and we can't go to you. So now the rich man changes tactics, realizes there's no hope for him. So he asks another favor. Hey, can you send Lazarus to speak to my brothers and warn them so they won't end up like I have? Again, we're ordering Lazarus around. And Abraham says, no, they've got Moses and the prophets. They've got the scripture. They should listen to them. The signs have already been put out for them. And the rich man says, no, that's not going to work. But what will work is if someone comes to them from the dead. And Abraham says, if they do not listen to Moses and the prophets, neither will they be convinced, even if someone rises from the dead. Last week, looking at the parable of the dishonest manager, I mentioned the Forbes 400 list, the list of the 400 wealthiest individuals in America. And what we learned is those people have a lot of money. Altogether, they control $6.6 trillion. And in our country, we have 400 people with $6.6 trillion. The bottom 50%, half the country, has only $4 trillion in wealth. So it's a great disparity there. And what we also learn from looking at the Forbes 100 list is not only how much these people possess, but also how little most of them give away. And Forbes ranks these people, giving them a score of 1 to 5, 5 giving the most, and on that 5 ranking, there were only 11 people, 11 out of 400. 75% were ones or twos, giving very little of this massive, unbelievable wealth. And so what we see is so many of these people choose not to give to others. In the parable today, Abraham tells the rich man that he received good things and Lazarus in his lifetime received evil things. See, Lazarus didn't just suffer. He wasn't just hungry. He had evil heaped upon him. His life was covered in evil. And where did this evil come from? This evil came from the willful neglect of this rich man. Lazarus is lying there at his door, and this man willfully did nothing. He ignored, he couldn't avoid him. It wasn't like he was in another country. I don't know who that is. He was at his doorstep. And the rich man ignoring the plight of this man dying at his gate is nothing but evil. The rich man saw Lazarus, knew he was there, and did nothing. And so while Lazarus is comforted here in the afterlife, the rich man exists in agony. It is a result of his doing nothing. Now he wants Lazarus to cross over and bring him some relief, but Abraham tells him that's not possible. Why? There's this chasm. There's this chasm between them. Now, where would this chasm have come from? Who created this chasm? Well, it's pretty clear. The rich man created the chasm. He created it in his lifetime when he ignored Lazarus. He created a chasm between him and this man who was in need. And that chasm has followed him into the afterlife. And so he is tormented by his inaction in his life. The rich man is responsible for the chasm. He is the author of his misery. Now, as I said last week, as we look at these parables in Luke, which do talk about money, because Luke is very concerned with wealth and money and how it reflects upon our lives, I also remind you, this is a time of year when we talk about stewardship. Actually, we should talk about stewardship all during the year, but this time of year, as we plan for the coming year, 2026, is it? Yes. As we plan for 2026 and how we are going to give to the church and the pledge that we're going to make, I ask you to think about this parable and the parable of the dishonest steward and how it is that we want our giving to reflect our lives. This is not meant to be a threat by any means, but simply a reminder that yes, our actions in this world are reflected in God's kingdom. Our actions in this world write our story, become the author of who we are, not just now, but in the kingdom to come. We will be judged on how we treat those who are in need. Amen.